Hello. You're about to listen to one of our audio-only webcasts, which was taken from one of our popular video webcasts. We'd love to get your feedback on how valuable and effective this format is for you. After you listen, please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio/survey to complete a quick evaluation. That's webcastaudio.com/survey. Thanks for the feedback and enjoy this podcast.
For more Microsoft webcasts, please go to microsoft.com/webcasts. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome everyone to our IT Manager webcast entitled Managing a Global Internal Help Desk with Outsourcing and Call Avoidance Techniques. It is my pleasure to introduce today's presenters, John Browning, who is a Service Desk Director, and Jeremy Eubanks, who is a Senior Program Manager. And with that, John, you now have the floor.
Thanks, Craig. Well, today we're going to discuss in detail how Microsoft manages their internal help desk and our outsource and offshore strategy. In addition, Jeremy's going to be speaking at the bottom of the hour about how we reduced 20% of our costs by implementing a call avoidance strategy and some other tools that we're using internally. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to the landscape of the Microsoft Help Desk on the second slide. We currently use three different vendors, and all of our agents are outsourced. We don't use internal Microsoft employees for those, but we do use, for some program management functions, Microsoft FTEs. And we purposely spread out our call center work across the globe, having a large call center in Colorado Springs. Our largest call center right now is in Bangalore, providing English support with about 190 agents. We also use French and Dublin support, French and German support out of Dublin right now. And then we just recently opened a new call center in Dalian, China, to do Chinese language, both traditional and simplified Chinese for the Greater China region. We also use Japanese language support out of Tokyo as well. On the desk side support area, we have service desk or desk side technicians spread all over the world, and I believe we have 102 countries right now where we're supporting Microsoft clients. So we have four main goals in the Microsoft Help Desk strategy, and like your help desk, one of our top goals is to continuously improve the quality and client satisfaction of our support operations. We also have a very big emphasis on reducing the needs for clients to actually contact us. And Jeremy's going to be speaking a lot about our big focus right now on call avoidance strategies, tools, and other ways to actually reduce our costs and improve client productivity. Our third main goal is how we drive the adoption of FastHelp. Now, FastHelp is our internal online help desk website where our internal clients can go there to be exposed to call avoidance options. But this also includes the marketing of online support tools, and Jeremy will speak just a little bit more about that later as well. Finally, one of the things in some ways that makes Microsoft unique with other large corporations that use their own tools is we have a big focus on making our products better, our software applications better, through piloting them internally. And when I say piloting them, we do them in a big way, as in with Vista support. We were using Vista products internally at Microsoft, beginning in the early beta stages and with large audiences at the beta 2 phase. So our help desk has a requirement to support our internal clients through these pre-release software deployments. We require our internal clients to install the software themselves and to help us with the client experience so that we make a better product. Of course, you can imagine that can drive a lot of new volume to the help desk, and it comes at a time where we may not have developed all of the knowledge base articles related to it, or even all of the training is completed because the product is still under development. So it provides our internal help desk with a unique challenge, but one that is good for Microsoft. So now we're going to talk about the life of a help desk ticket at Microsoft. And we do use three main ways of getting support issues into the help desk, either by clients picking up the phone or using an online web form submission or using online chat. Online web form and online chat are used through the FastHelp online service that Jeremy will talk about soon. But most of our volume goes through the service desk, and most of it by the phone. And at that point, about 80% of it is actually resolved at the service desk, with another 10% being dispatched to deskside support. Those are primarily for hardware-related issues that can't be resolved on the phone. And then we have Tier 2 groups for us, Tier 2, which is line of business applications and internal infrastructure, and we send about 10% of those combined to those two Tier 2 areas. To the left of the slide, for your future reference, I have listed here what some of our key service desk metric goals are, both for phone and for online chat, and these have brought us a client satisfaction rate of under 5%, usually around 4%, dissatisfied, in both of the chat and the phone metrics. I'm going to move to the next slide here. This is for your reference. It's an environmental slide about the help desk environment, the number of tickets that we support, the number of support agents that we have on site, and the distribution of support volume by location, as well as some key metrics, actual performance metrics over on the right-hand side. A couple of things to note here is that we do allow and encourage our Microsoft employees, in most cases, to be their own system administrators. So this means they have full access to install software that they want, change settings, and one of the things to note about Microsoft, like any other corporation, is that we are comprised of some very technical people and some non-technical people. So this can present a challenge sometimes in the help desk setup, and you know, people could mess up their system somehow by making some changes to the system. However, we want them to be administrators in most cases because we want them to do this pre-release testing for us, to actually install the software themselves, to tell us what works well and what doesn't work well. As you can imagine, that does drive some increased help desk calls as a result. And then additionally, we are running at about 20% call avoidance right now. Jeremy will talk about that in a little bit. And we're looking forward to driving that number even higher in the coming months with some of the new tools that we're using right now and then about to employ. So I'm going to switch gears here for a moment and talk a little bit about why Microsoft went offshore. So I mentioned earlier that we outsource to three major vendors most of the help desk work right now. But about 4 years ago, we made a decision to move away from onshore support with those vendors and look at some other sites, as in India and China. And so we, at that time, decided to move about 60-75% of our work from North America-based to Bangalore, India. And we started that process in 2004. It was actually 2003. It was implemented in 2004. And what we have now is an opportunity to go back and look at what worked well, what didn't work so well, and really compare what we thought was going to happen to what actually did happen, and to share those findings with you today. Now, one of the main reasons that we did decide to go offshore was because we wanted to and expected to reduce help desk expense. And when I say expense, I'm referring to specifically cost per client and the cost per contact. We expected those costs to go down. And additionally, though, there's a lot of benefits in going offshore, especially in countries where you may not have a strong presence in now, because you do develop a lot of new relationships, and doing business in country can oftentimes open a lot of doors. So it can be good for your business in general to do something like this. We wanted to strengthen our business continuance model, and in a couple of ways we were looking at doing that. One is we're able to load balance now and to send calls basically in a follow the sun pattern. So what that does is it reduces our higher costs of support in the U.S. by not having to staff people in an overnight position in the U.S., and we can staff those in the daytime in, say, Bangalore. In addition, it allows us some business continuance security so that if we have any issues with a particular call center site or if there are telecom issues or something that causes a site not to be fully functional, then we know we can fall back on the other places that we have that we have call centers at. Additionally, then by having your folks spread out over these different geographies, having people work primarily in their normal working days, the hope is that you can reduce attrition rates as well, particularly in your America or your onshore sites. You'll always see generally a better attrition rate, lower attrition rate if you're working in a day shift. And then finally, we expected that we would maintain a comparable performance going offshore than what we had on onshore. And this was certainly the goal. And as you'll see in a moment, the results are generally that. I'm going to move to the next side, expectations and cost versus reality. Cost versus client expectation. So we expected that cost per client would decrease, and I list on the slide there, about 35%, and we would accomplish that by sending 75% of the volume to India, Bangalore specifically. And in fact, as of recently, our cost has been reduced by about 27% and sending 60% of the volume to India. This is after 2.5 years of full deployment. We decided to stop the offshoring at that point at about 60%. And the reasons we did that is because we did want to maintain the balance of having some day work in the North America space. We have some day work in the India space as well as some day work, some night work there. And we found, and we'll talk about this more in just a little bit, but we found that once our call center in Bangalore got to the of a specific size, we're about 190 folks right now, that it becomes a little bit less manageable, and then you have to rely strongly on the management folks that you have there in Bangalore to lead that team, to generate the new hires, to keep up with attrition, and we decided to keep it at about 60% right now because of that reason. We thought that client satisfaction would decrease, and our overall satisfaction rate prior to going offshore to India was 97%. That means about 3% of our surveys returned were unhappy. By the way, we send out a survey on every closed service request. It's an email-generated survey, automatically generated, asks the same 7 questions to all clients. We get about a 20% return on the survey itself. So it's a pretty decent survey return rate, and our results are fairly consistent. So we think our numbers are pretty good there. What actually happened after migrating is that our satisfaction rate did go down as expected, but it didn't go down quite as much as we expected. So we were very, very much encouraged by this finding. We have a very satisfied rating, which is a subset of satisfied, and we expected it to decrease as far down as 75%. Well, in fact, it did go down quite a bit, from 91% down to 83% very satisfied for our Bangalore site. And there's a variety of reasons for that. We'll talk about some of those in a moment. In fact, one of them is the accent issues on this fourth bullet point down. We did expect that to be a significant dissatisfier. In fact, it wasn't the largest dissatisfier, but the actual communication, not the accent or the understanding, but the communication process back and forth between agent and client was one of the things that people were most unhappy with. That, and it did take a little bit longer to resolve some of the issues as well. Now, it's an interesting thing to note here that it's not only the accent that you might expect from a call center agent in Bangalore or China or any other offshore location, but that drives frustration, but it is the accent from the client themselves, because we're a global call center taking calls from 102 Microsoft locations. A lot of times we're asking our internal clients to communicate with us in English primarily about very technical issues. This is often drives some difficult communication process between the agent and the client themselves, and so it's not always just the accent that's coming from the agent that is the issue. There are two skills that we are very important in a help desk call center agent, and one, we are looking for very technical folks, especially on the Microsoft help desk, because of the emphasis on supporting pre-release software that we talked about earlier. So we're looking for obviously very technical folks, but then at the same time they need to have good communication skills so that they can help less technical clients troubleshoot through their issues and resolve their problems. Now, ideally we get the subset that includes both of those qualities in a call center agent. And that can be a difficult mix to find in a place like Bangalore, where you have folks that have focused on being very technical, very well qualified, but maybe have focused less on their communication skills. Or you get folks that have focused on communication skills to the lesser extent of being polished in the technical side. So finding that subset has been actually more difficult than we expected. And once you find those folks, they become in demand very quickly and can easily be hired away from you. So I'm going to move on to the next slide here, looking at expectation versus reality about the actual quality of the support there. So we did expect an increase in average handle time. We ended up with about 3 minutes extra per service request that it takes to handle one from Bangalore than it did from our North America locations. One of our goals is to resolve tickets or service requests within 60 minutes. We thought that would be less than what it was before, but in fact they did resolve about the same amount, which could lead you to draw a conclusion that goal of 60 minutes as a goal for resolving issues was a little bit too high. It should be a little bit less than that. Finally, we thought the call abandon rate would increase, but we weren't sure exactly how much. In fact, there is about a 4% difference in the increase in the call abandon rate. For example, if we saw calls abandoned in our North America site at about 3%, we might see it at as high as 7% for our Bangalore-based calls. Now, the reason for this is because people can tell when they have reached our Bangalore call center sometimes, and they may choose not to engage that agent there and would hang up and call back into the call center until they reached another location. Unfortunately, that's one of the things that we found about this, and there will always be these perceptions that you'll need to manage with your internal clients, so that they grow to trust and respect the call centers that they deal with no matter where they are located. But it is a fact that we did see this increase in calls abandoned. Moving to the next slide regarding staffing expectations versus reality, we thought we would see about 40% attrition in the call center agent space. In fact, this was one of our biggest surprises, that the annual attrition rate, annualized, is about 60%. Been pretty steady at about 60% for our offshore location. This is, when you think about it, not too surprising, because people that have a chance to work for a large corporation in a help desk environment in very technical space here, it's a great training ground for people that want to build their career path and move from location to location for better positions. And this is a great place to start. And so we do have a lot of people who come to us qualified. They spend some time, less than a year on the Microsoft service desk, and then they receive offers to move to other areas and apply the new knowledge they've learned about Microsoft products especially products that are not yet released that are coming so that other companies can prepare for those releases as well. So this has been, I would say, one of our biggest challenges in offshoring, and particularly in India, is the high attrition rate that we've experienced in this area. There are things that can be done to counteract this, as in having incentive plans for new agents so that when they stay X number of months or years, there is a tiered level of incentive, be it pay or bonus or whatever the benefit would be, to encourage them to stay. The reality is, in a market like particularly Bangalore, there is such a high demand for qualified technical workers that it's easy for somebody to jump from one position to another at a pretty substantial pay increase. And this is just the realities of offshoring in this particular area. Regarding the salary inflation rate, we did expect it to be high, and it was. It's 16%. Is according to the Hewitt survey, is the technical job salary inflation rate for India is 16% per year. In fact, in Bangalore, it is significantly higher because of the intensity. The supply and demand curve is out of whack there, and there is much more demand for highly competent folks right now than there is a supply. We didn't think we would have issues in staffing when we first started up offshore. In fact, we have a lot of candidates, but again, as I mentioned, we want them that are a combination of very capable technically and good communication skills. And so we have not had the supply of talent in that area that we had hoped for. And then once we do get them again, it's hard to maintain them for a long period of time. We want it to be fully implemented at 75% of our volume going to Bangalore. Like I said earlier, we did ramp that down. And to note, it was slower than expected as well. And so I'm going to actually move into the next slide here to talk about a little bit why it was slower and some lessons that we learned that you might use if you are thinking about offshoring your help desk. So in summary about offshoring, we would definitely do this again if we were to do it over. It can reduce your costs significantly. You've got an untapped labor market in many cases that is ready to provide you good service. The cost reduction is substantial. There are oftentimes a cost versus quality trade-off, but what we've seen so far is it's been positive for us. So regarding lessons learned, I mentioned that implementation time can be longer than you expected originally, and this is for a variety of reasons. In our case, we're working with a time zone that's 12 hours away from Redmond, Washington-based time, and so a lot of times you don't have real-time communication when you're working on a project, especially a startup project. Salary inflation eroding expected savings. I mentioned the 16% annual survey, a salary increase. It doesn't take too long before that starts to erode the savings that you expected for going offshore. So when you build your cost-benefit analysis, you really need to look at least a five-year model to anticipate what your how your salary inflation is going to impact your overall expected savings, because it will be significant. On that note, the full cost model must be evaluated. There are a lot of hidden costs that we've come up and seen in the implementation process. For example, traveling to Bangalore from Washington State is at least a 24-hour proposition and very expensive. And then the costs of hotels, et cetera, in some of these locations are very expensive. All of these things will erode some of the savings that you expected. You should expect that you'll need additional training in those areas because it will take longer for your training materials to be absorbed as well. Even though there has been a push for India implementations for many years now, you still should not expect that the outsource provider you would be working with is an expert in this area, because the business is still very much in a startup mode. There's a lot of new players entering the implementations in India all the time, you want to make sure that you find one that has significant experience in more than one deployment, in this case in India, and that it's a substantial size so that they've had a chance to be able to react to market conditions, to know what it is to manage high attrition rates and things like that. So you really don't want to take for granted that the person you're entrusting this to or the company is an expert until you see some proof of that. What we've also found is that it's very helpful to have a full-time person, that in this case a Microsoft employee, managing this engagement from Bangalore, and we actually have some of our FTE folks there that oversee our operations in Bangalore. Very helpful. Accent neutralization, we found that using somebody, in this case is an expatriate, with a Western accent has really helped, because the agents there get more exposure to the type of communication style that you would desire to begin with. It's not that expensive to do this in an offshore location, and it's been very successful for us. I mentioned earlier, agent training can take longer than expected. You should always plan for extra communications issues, and that and time zone differences will slow the forward progress at times. On my last slide about lessons learned, we talked about attrition earlier. One thing about attrition is it's more than just the cost of staffing and turnover and training, but I'll give you an example. The first group of people that we brought into the call center in Bangalore, we taught them everything we knew about help desk support and standard operating procedures, and then as they started to filter out into other corporations and leave the Microsoft help desk, that knowledge it was lost. Sometimes it was passed on to other people, sometimes not passed on as well as we would like. And so your first group, if you focus on that first group, will do very well in their support quality. But attrition can easily take your support quality down if you don't have a very robust training program and a mentoring program within the call center agents, so that some of that tribal knowledge, if you will, isn't lost when people leave. Just a quick note about telecom quality and cost increase due to telecom. We've had some experiences where we've had line noise. If calls are handed off in a load balancing type scenario, calls might go into a queue and then get funneled into another queue from one call center to another. And, for example, a call that starts in Singapore goes to the United States for a queue and then gets queued back into Bangalore. There is a chance you're going to see some latency in that call or some call quality issues. Holiday festivals, political unrest, legal holidays, all of these you have to take into anticipation and, of course, ensure adequate coverage for local holidays and anticipate staffing issues during those times. Specialization obviously can improve the quality. It depends on the size of your help desk, whether or not you can specialize or can afford to specialize. It should equal more cost, but it's a cost versus quality trade-off. And then finally, online chat offshore can be very effective. Right now we have 62 people in Bangalore who do nothing but handle online chat 7x24. And it has been very effective. One thing to note is there is a higher average handle time with online chat. That's due to the nature of typing, but it can actually increase your cost, chat versus phone. That has been our experience. But if you choose to use online chat to neutralize some of the accent issues from both clients and agents, can be very successful. So now I'm going to turn it over to Jeremy Eubanks. Jeremy is the manager responsible for help desk technologies and has been in this area a long time and has helped drive some of the good successes we've seen in calls lanes. Jeremy?
Thanks, John. First of all, thanks everyone for joining us, and hopefully a short week for you guys in the States. I wanted to go ahead and get rolling on the call avoidance strategy that we've deployed here in the last about 24 months. First thing we realized out of the gate is we need to really get an online presence for support. And it sounds pretty simple. One of the things we quickly realized, being technical guys, is we like to create very busy web pages with links to lots of resolution articles, KB articles, to other sites that have answers. And we found that very quickly our users stopped using the site. And one of the things our focus group feedback was, it was just too busy. So one of the big recommendations we had here is keep it KISS. You want to keep it very simple. For the standard user, non-technical user is probably your best audience. How can they create an SR and get help easily? And we'll look at the site a little bit and walk through some of the changes we did from our version 2 to our version 3. And all that was based out of focus group and user feedback. Chat support. We deployed chat support a little over 24 months ago. And one of the big reasons for this was we needed to give those users a reason to go to the website. We found out that a lot of users would go to the website, give it a try, didn't find anything, and they would have to call us anyway. Chat support gave them a means to their end. If they couldn't find the answers on the website, they could go ahead and start a chat at the end of their search. And this seemed to drive more users to give it a try. And that way they know if they didn't find what they were looking for, they could still get support quickly and easily from the website itself. Another good thing about chat support, as John alluded to a little bit earlier, any users that have English as a second language prefer to type versus talk. So we've seen a larger adoption in like Latin America, for example, where the users feel fine writing English. They just are nervous about talking it over the phone. And then once you add in accent issues, because a lot of our volume is in Bangalore, it leads to even further difficulties. So between eliminating the actual voice piece of it and doing it over chat seems to improve their experience. Another good thing about the online presence is call volume spikes. As most of us probably know with the help desk, you're going to get a lot of spikes that you can't do much about. Key for us is as soon as we know about these spikes, we get something posted to the website. We've seen a pretty good avoidance from users just going to the Fast Help website, seeing the status update, and knowing at least we're investigating it. Before the alert center, which is what we call it, users would still call in just to let us know that they were experiencing an issue and just log the request so they can get updates. But now users are becoming accustomed just to go to the website to see what's going on, even if it's been updated with latest information, which is preventing the call. The other big thing we've done, and we'll walk through this a little bit, is we've integrated our KB, our knowledge base, into the creation of an SR, or incident, through the creation of a chat. And the big thing about this is what we've noticed is we have tons of great KB articles. It's just sometimes it's hard to find those through the different searches and whatnot that the KB tool allows. So building it through and helping the user search has increased the leverage of the KB, which has led to further call avoidance. The next slide here is actually our homepage. One of the things, I'll kind of walk you through the site and why we've kind of detailed it how we have. On the top left, the first part is the user has to go through a series of steps. We have five steps to create an SR or a chat in this scenario. The first step is the user selects their location. The reason this is important is we offer different services based on locations. Sometimes if it's a certain location, we'll route you to the Japan call center because they provide the Japanese support you need. Same with Chinese, same with French and German support. We also, if you select your site and select hardware, we'll directly dispatch you to the local desk site technician, which we call auto-routed SRs. The reason this is important, since John mentioned earlier, we pay per contact. So every time someone calls the help desk, we pay, I'm just making the number up, $20 per SR. So a lot of these SRs we can't resolve. It goes back to the old resolution rate metrics that a lot of us have. Is, hey, if you get 100 SRs and you only can resolve 70 of them, you have a 70% resolution rate. But the other 30 that you take, you still have to pay for. In this scenario, we'll just bypass the call center directly and auto-route these to those Tier 2 or desk side groups. And last year, we had over 100,000 auto-routed SRs, which doesn't take long to add up those savings just based on bypassing the help desk. On the next slide, based on what you select in the number 3, 4, and 5, it's going to actually pull up in that blank area right now the KB articles associated with what you selected. And this is a good way for us to push our KB articles to the users that might have issues searching the KB directly. At this point, we pretty much understand the user needs support, but we're trying one last effort to give them the KB articles to self-help themselves. It's also great, the online support site's also great to push a lot of your other self-healing tools, scripts, and we'll talk about those a little bit, in chat. Last year, chat was over 110,000 chats for the year. This year, we're averaging about 20% of our overall volume is chat. So we're seeing a larger adoption in chat more and more we mature the service. This next slide gives you an idea of how the KB articles will be pushed back to the user. This is just a mock-up, so I don't actually have selections or what. But you'll see those icons also show the user where self-help is available. On the very top one, for example, that shows that there's a video. The first one, the icon, shows there's a video available for that KB article. But what we've noticed is a lot of our users, in, for example, HR or finance, they would kind of like to watch how it goes through. So we'll record that step-through process using Windows Media Recorder to show the user what the technician would do. The next one is a little book, means there's a guide. So there's either a PowerPoint that kind of walks the user through the process. And the wrench is a tool. So that says there's a self-help script available. So, for example, the first one we did was how to create an Outlook signature, which is pretty simple for a lot of folks, but there's some users out there that don't know how to do it. It's about a six-step process. If there's a script available for that, the user just clicks a button, and I'll walk them through the whole thing. They don't need to understand where in the submenus in Outlook to go to find that. And then on the bottom, once they select number 5, it'll give them an option that you'll see it down there on the bottom right. It says Start Live Web Chat. So at that point, if the user doesn't see their KB articles, they can still go ahead and log into a chat and get support from one of the technicians in Bangalore. Up top, there's the Alert Center, which is in red, which will drive users eye there first. Right now, when I took this screenshot, there was 4 alerts. That could range from any type of outage to line of business app outages or an exchange outage or anything like that. Top right, languages. So we have Fast Help in 5 different languages, so users want to read the website in their native language, they can go ahead and select the language and remember my language, so when they come back, it'll be the same. Going down to the next slide, you'll see here's some of our auto-routing success. And more we kind of get the website out there, you could see how our volumes have increased. I haven't updated this slide since January, but you can see when we first rolled out Fast Help, not a lot of people were going there, and we'll talk about some of the marketing efforts we were doing. But more and more Tier 2s are finding out about it. And when these Tier 2s realized that they could have all their customers log the request in one single spot, they started onboarding to the website. And they have to work through us to set up some of the taxonomy behind the scenes to route it to the correct the groups within our CRM tool. But you can see as more and more people find out about it and get routed to the correct spot the first time, the numbers have gone up. In January, you can see over 12,000 auto router requests. The cost savings associated with that was over 160 for that month. Here's one thing that we kind of learned the hard way as we were rolling out the Fast Help website was trying to get adoption stuff. We made a conscious decision at the beginning. We couldn't change our IVR phone number, so we kind of eliminated that way to drive adoption. So we were trying to drive adoption through promotion and having that first experience be a good one. One thing, we came up with the name Fast Help, because it stuck in people's minds. We tried to change it actually a couple times, but everyone kept referring to it after we made the name change. So we knew, that's when we knew we had a winner because we couldn't get it to change. We've done a lot of direct marketing. One thing we realized, new employees at any organization, they're going to log the most requests in the first 6 months at the company. So we've got a presence in the Microsoft new hire classes where on average we have hire about 100 people a week. So that's a lot of new users coming in to create requests. We've created a lot of posters, done a lot of road shows to different admin fairs and stuff like that to drive awareness. We've even done incentive campaigns where we've given away coffee coupons for people that just visit the website, and then we do a random drawing at the end of the week just to get people to drive it there. The good thing is it's easy to justify a lot of that stuff because the more and more auto routes, the more self-help triggers we use, the more money we save, so we can reinvest some of that to drive the adoption. The last item there, you know, we've done a lot of marketing collateral. We have pins around Microsoft Campus, lots of posters that we worked with a design firm to kind of draw people's attention to, which has also increased site traffic. I think over the last 24 months, we used to average about 6,000 people a week to the Fast Help website. This last month, I think we're over 17,000, to give you an idea of the impact associated with the marketing that was coming. Some of the other call avoidance stuff we've done is, and I've kind of hinted at a little bit earlier, is self-help scripts. This is pretty simple. You just focus on a lot of your top call drivers. well, what are people calling you about? And then you grab the KB articles associated with that, find a developer, and sit down to determine if you can script it. A lot of these aren't rocket science. You know, they range from, I got the examples here, how to join a domain to clearing your IE cookies and Dash, which sounds pretty simple, but you get a lot of non-technical users calling the help desk how it is. You'd be surprised how many times these get used from an end-user standpoint. Scripts are pretty simple. They're not much more than VB script that the user can execute from the KB article. Each one that's executed is pretty much an SR or column eliminated. Down below, I pretty much showed you my ROI calculation. If we take a simple script, for example, that Outlook signature, right now we outsource our development of these scripts to a vendor. It's about $1,000 per script. We only need it run 66 times to get our money back. Some of the most complex ones is where you might have to engage a user to get some information. You might have to uninstall and reinstall an application. Those will run about $5,000 per script, and you only need those about 333 times to be executed to pay for itself. If you have a large call volume, it's pretty easy to justify some of these. I think last year the global service desk, we had over a million SRs. So these are just a fraction of percentage to pay for some of these scripts to be done. Self-help videos. You know, we did some of the focus groups to see what people think of these, and it's kind of split 50-50. Your very technical users will not use self-help videos. They know how to do it, or it's a pride thing. But non-technical people, we're seeing as admins, again, sales and marketing, they like to watch the videos to see what's actually going to occur before they attempt the KB article themselves. Going down, self-healing technologies. So this is something we're pretty excited about. We're looking at deploying, hopefully here in the near future. Screenshot's a little outdated, but I'll tell you about what we're looking at doing here. Microsoft acquired a company called Gtecco about a little over a year ago. And really what this does is it allows you to have a presence on the end user's desktop. And the application on the desktop, it's usually sitting in the system tray, will look for system error messages. And you can trigger based off of those. For example, you know, a lot of Microsoft employees VPN into the network, and every once in a while there'll be an error with that, and the application that we VPN with will provide custom errors, and it'll be displayed to the user. With this application on the desktop, we can intercept that error and automate the KB article associated with fixing it. So it really allows the users to get connected to the network without having to call the help desk. One of the big things is a lot of people say, well, why don't you just fix the error? And the key is we do. It just takes some time to get that next release out of the VPN application to use. Sometimes it could be 6 months, sometimes it could be 12 months, but that could generate 10,000 calls over that lifetime. And some of these triggers, as you saw earlier, range from $3,000 to $5,000 to generate. We get their ROI within 1 month, so it pays to get those out and push them out to the client. Another great thing about this desktop agent is you can push your KB articles offline. So if I'm traveling, I don't have access to the CorpNet or even Internet, I can open up this tool, which opens up like this. I can see the most used KB articles for users that are traveling. And that way, they first of all, they know what the help desk phone number is if they need a call. They know some of the error messages and how to resolve them. And it helps them get them up and running while they're traveling. You can also push outage alerts to this. To the desktop, so if there's a major outage going on and you know people are going to be calling, you can notify users on their desktop. One of the new things that we're really excited about we just deployed recently is an automated service agent. And this is a Microsoft product that allows users to do free-based text search. I'm not a highly technical guy on how all this works behind the scenes, but our early results are pretty positive. What we're doing is we're taking our top-used KB articles and loading it into the tool. It takes care of all the searching pieces of it. But users can just ask free-based text search questions on here. I'm going to go query your KB and come back with the most relevant answers. The good thing about this is that from a tool administrator, we can see how people are asking questions, and we can tweak the tool to return results better and faster. Another good thing about this is you could see users just asking random questions that maybe we don't have KB articles, and we can fill the gaps pretty quickly. And this is one thing that we're looking at pushing more and more people to from a self-help point of view in probably the next 0 to 6 months. The last slide here, I wanted to talk about some of the line of business volumes that we've gotten at Microsoft. It really cost us a lot of money. One of the things is we have pretty stringent security policies that most companies probably do. And one of the things our security looks for is if you haven't updated your ran your Windows update rather quickly. They shut down your port within an X amount of time. And that means you're pretty much off the corporate network until you call into the help desk and have us re-enable it. This was a major call driver for us because a lot of people are on vacation, get a lot of emails, you might just miss something. So we had a lot of port shutdowns. On average, about $6,000 per month, over $120,000 per month in costs. So we worked with the security team to build an emailing component. So if your port's about to get shut down, you'll get at least two emails 48 and 24 hours ahead of time before we shut down your port. This has reduced volumes considerably. I have 1,000 per month now, but I looked the other day, and it's less than 200 this month. So that's a net gain of 5,800 SRs we're saving per month. So that's taken a lot of stress off our help desk because those spikes are hard to staff to. Also, the cost is quite considerable. I think it was about $1.6 million last year that we spent just on doing ports. An unblocked tool for smart cards. Microsoft's going to a smart card world where we won't have passwords in the near future. And this is key where users a lot of times will forget their PIN for their smart card. This tool allows users to reset their PIN over the extranet, so again, they don't have to call into the Microsoft help desk and reset it. We eliminated about 4,500 SRs per month with this tool. Again, it takes us completely out of the loop and enables users to do it pretty seamlessly. That was my last slide. So, Craig, I was going to hand it back to you.
All right, wonderful. Fantastic presentation, gentlemen. I will go ahead and share some additional resources with our crowd here today. We will get into our question and answer session just in a moment here. Once again, if you do have any questions or concerns, feel free to go ahead and ask away by using the question and answers pane found in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. As I mentioned earlier, you can view a replay of today's live event to try to catch anything you may have missed, or you can register for some upcoming webcasts by going to www.microsoft.com/webcast. The streaming media replay and downloadable WMV file will be available within 24 hours. I'm going to be providing a survey for today's event here in just a minute. I would like to encourage everyone to go ahead and complete today's evaluation. The feedback and comments that you provide just allow us to create a better webcast for you in the future. Because of that, your feedback is greatly appreciated. Here is that survey slide, so if you could go ahead and follow the links that are provided in your interface and take a moment to give us some feedback on today's webcast. With that, I'll go ahead and hand the floor back to John and Jeremy so that they can answer some questions that have come in.
Thanks, Greg. Actually, I got a good question here. It asks about some of the difficulties with chat and the deployment of it. So really, I wanted to touch on a couple things. One thing John mentioned a little bit earlier is when we deployed chat, we didn't expect our average handle time to be as high as it was. Today, our phone average handle time is about 18 minutes, a little higher than industry standards, but due to the dog fooding we do, it sometimes takes a little bit longer to document it. On chat right now, it's almost up to 29 minutes. The reasons why behind this is it varies. One is a lot of times users get distracted, and they'll be off doing email while the technicians wait for you to answer them back. Two, a lot more troubleshooting, a lot more Q&A going back over for chat. And even two things is a lot of users on chat, they don't feel like they're committed as much. So a lot of times users just say, hey, I got to go to the restroom. I'll be back in 5 minutes. All these things kind of drive up the average handle time. The other thing is around concurrency. When we did our business requests for business requirements for chat, we thought we'd handle a higher concurrency factor. So when you do a demo or have a vendor come in and show you a chat tool, they always say, hey, you can take four chats with our tool, which is great, but we realized very quickly we're not able to do more than two very well. And even two drives up your average handle time even more, especially if you're doing a remote assistance with one user, the other user gets ignored during that time. The other key is goes back to the Q&A back and forth. If you're doing in-depth troubleshooting with your user, it's hard to disengage from that conversation, re-engage into another one. So we try to eliminate our concurrency as much as possible just because it seems to be just that driver.
Jeremy, that brought up a good point to my mind as well about average handle time. Because calls are all avoided, a lot of times those are the easier to handle items that usually have lower average handle time. So as a result of going up by that way, that's a good point. I've got a question here about large call centers offshore. In Bangalore, we have a plus system. And I would say definitely there are some extra challenges there. There's two. One offshore specifically, when you have larger groups, plus 150 factors, called the rule of 150, where when teams get larger than 150 people in that range, they start to lose some of their team spirit. They start to think more as individuals and less as doing things for the team, and that's where you've really got to have a strong management team there to support them. Now, I bring up the strong management team because that's probably one of the areas where we've had consistent turnover in the vendor management teams that we've seen in offshore locations. And again, when they get some experience in a large call center environment like Microsoft with some of the special challenges that we have, they become very marketable and then be lured away to other sites. So consistent management is a problem when you get into larger call centers like that. And also you want to make sure those teams are divided. They're not trying to function as
well. All right, John, I got one more. What's next for the self-healing technologies at Microsoft? So I kind of hinted at both of them, but the ones we're going to be spending the most of the time with is the Gtekko deployment. Hopefully we have some positive results with that at the beginning of the year. We get that on the Microsoft desktops for our customers. And driving adoption to that automated service agent. So we have pretty high hopes for that tool and where we're going to take it the next step. So we see a lot of potential gains to increase that call volume even more.
And I have one more here about if there are any other offshore locations that we are looking at or interested in. And, in fact, I'll give you one specific example. We have, I mentioned our Japanese language support being out of Tokyo, Japan right now. There's a new market, relatively new market in China to do actually Japanese language support and under special circumstances because of the trade and the interaction that goes back and forth between the countries. It's something that we are exploring right now in the service, in the help desk area. It might be that in that first stage, though, you would want to have some folks from Japan actually lead that effort, as in people that would speak Japanese, that are Japanese, in and bring them to China for a short duration to get that started up. Other areas we're looking at is Eastern Europe, Budapest and Sofia, as well as Lisbon, Portugal. Again, great emerging markets for call center airspace and have been for a few years. These are lower cost markets than some of the standard places you would think of, and also offer extra language capabilities that you might not get readily in some places in North America. I believe that's all the questions we have right now, Craig, so I'll hand it back to you.
Okay, fantastic. Well, once again, great presentation, gentlemen. Look like we have any more questions are correct. But we will remain online for the next several minutes to try to answer any follow-up questions or concerns that you may have via the question and answer text window. With that, I would like to extend a special thank you to our presenters today. I would also like to thank everyone for coming out and attending today's webcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to conclude our broadcast for today. Thank you again for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you again in the future. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of this conference.
Hello, thank you for listening to this webcast. We value your feedback, so please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio.com/survey to complete a quick evaluation. Thank you.